There's a saying in the wedding industry, if you don't have a venue booked, you don't have a wedding date. Because basically, once you've got your fiancé sorted, the very next consideration is the place, the where of your celebration. And some would argue that booking in your planner should be first. And I absolutely understand why. Having your planner on board from the jump is smart because a great wedding planner will help to guide you towards a venue that's more likely to fit your needs and your vision, definitely your budget, and perhaps save you time and potentially bring some options to the table that you may not have even considered, like you didn't know they existed. But keeping all that in mind, many engaged couples definitely in this economic climate simply cannot afford to book a planner and are looking to do all the running around, the site visits, the calculations, the communication and negotiating themselves. And I can certainly understand that because I did exactly the same thing. Yep. Mind you, that was almost 10 years ago. And the options for hiring a wedding planner and the scope of their packages, they've changed significantly over the years. And in fact, Emily from The Modern Approach has a great example of how a consultant-style wedding package has grown in popularity because they start you off with a few hours of picking their brain, going through your options, you know, pure gold, and then they set you free to do it all on your own. This gives you a head start and it saves you a massive amount of time and money through a lack of local knowledge and the indecision that can stem from quite simply not having ever done this before. It's genius, right? But if you are like me and you've decided to plan your own wedding and are not able to take advantage of a professional wedding planner's immense knowledge, experience, and contacts list, then you want to go into looking for your venue with your eyes wide open. There is an unbridled checklist for you to go through with each of your wedding venues that you go along to have a look at, so you know that you're asking the right questions and recording the answers so you don't forget them too. And you can download your free wedding venue booking checklist PDF, which has all the questions that you really need to be asking from unbridledly.com. And I'll put the link in the show notes for you so you can access that. But today, in this podcast episode, these are five extras. These are five questions that are over and above the basic, but are pretty important when it comes to you and your guests' enjoyment, safety, ease of wedding setup, and also matching your vision with the reality of what your venue can truly offer and will look like with your budget in mind. Let's get stuck into it. Unbridledly is a community of pro wedding vendors who believe in freedom and integrity in weddings, giving you options, solutions, tips, and tricks to create the experience and memories that you and your fiancé really want and deserve. Because we believe that weddings are a team sport. With how-tos, stories and interviews with recently married couples, we find out what went right and what they'd change if they could go back and do it all over again. I'm Camille and welcome to the Unbridledly podcast. So big thanks to Tita, the celebrant behind Porvida Ceremonies, for this golden question that you might not have thought of asking, and that is around the use of PAs or playing of music outdoors at some venues that have noise restrictions. And do you know what? Even indoors, because sometimes there is just not a lot of insulation there to keep the sound inside. So you want to be asking your potential wedding venue, do you have any inside or outside noise restrictions at your venue, at your property, or with the council or county? And you want to dig fairly deep here because if you're having any sort of boisterous, joyous, I don't know, what do you call it? You want to pump the music up. You'll want to know how many decibels is the limit and or what time does the loud music or voices, the loud sounds, when do they need to stop? And of course, with or without any official noise ordinances, which is a fancy way of saying there are rules around the amount of noise and the timing of noise, you want to consider the neighbours anyway, right? Are they close by? What is considered reasonable for that council area, that state, or that county? Big, big question, especially for those who want a party vibe. The last thing you need is the police knocking on the front door at, what, 9:30 going, guys, can you turn it down? Because you're likely to get a warning, but then equally so, you'll be asked just to stop. And that has to be the most massive killer of joy and fun, like a complete buzzkill, to have your wedding shut down. Like, I would die of embarrassment. I'm sure anyone would die of embarrassment in that situation. And you'd be really dirty too. So much money, time, effort in the planning of this day to have it cut short. No, you're going to ask this question up front. And then the second question, and this is from the amazing Emily from The Modern Approach, who is a planner, stylist, unofficial counsellor, and a wealth of event knowledge. And she says that her biggest tip to couples looking for their venue would be to find out if their venue has the correct permission to operate as a wedding venue. And what she means is, if you're holding your wedding in a place where events and functions already operate, if you're in a hotel, a function centre, usually restaurants, what else? Perhaps a sporting club, maybe a life-saving venue, a sailing club, places where there are licenses, permits, things already in place, then this might not even come up as an issue for you. But there are some private venues that definitely have gained in popularity, and you can understand why, because they come without a whole stack of rules and regulations, which is brilliant, right? It's a little bit more free. You get to do a bit more of what you want. And the price is right too. And this is because some DIY venues, or we call them dry hire venues, they're venues where really you've got the walls. You might have plumbing. You might have a kitchen in there. There may be toilets. There may not. You're bringing everything in. It's a space for you to fill, to decorate, to make your very own, which is brilliant as far as styling goes, of course, because you get exactly what you want within your budget limits, of course. But with these DIY or dry hire venues, some don't have the correct permits to be operating as an event venue. They might not have licensing, which is fine. Like here in Australia, with venues where you're holding a private party, where you're not having a ticketed event, that's fine. You can go without licensing. And sometimes it's preferred for wedding venues in particular to not have an alcohol license. So you bring in your own and you're responsible for your guests and their consumption of that alcohol. But sometimes council approval, the place or space is not approved for the purpose of having an event. It might not have the right registration. It might not have the right classification. And this is why the cost is a bit lower, because some private property owners who open up their space, their land, sheds, buildings for weddings, haven't protected, essentially, the couples that choose to have their weddings there by taking care of those things that are traditional hospitality venue must have in place. And so some of those things might be event insurance for the numbers of people who would attend an event rather than just use a residential property for everyday use. You know, you might have a dinner party at your place. What's that? 8 to 10 people, but we're talking 80 to 100 people. And it's about having the insurance to protect those people should something go wrong. We're talking about safety inspections for things like fire. So an adequate number of fire extinguishers, fire exits, fire alarms, sprinkler systems. We're talking about electrical checks for the load that would be required for lights, sound, generators, structural and accessibility integrity checks, first aid kits, food safety, because of course if the venue provides food, they need to adhere to food safety regulations, because you don't want all of your family and friends to be sick from foodborne illnesses. And things like security as well. So venues generally have security measures in place. So this could include security personnel, you know, security guards, surveillance cameras, controlled access to the venue. Otherwise, of course, anyone who's coming past who sees the party could come on in. And that may not be a massive concern to you, but some anecdotal evidence online and, you know, in forums like Reddit, like Quora, suggests that in general, Airbnb and VRBO venues, you need to have an extra level of caution when you're booking these venues specifically for your weddings or getting ready or, you know, other events too. I was reading one that was saying that, you know, it was talking about the viability of Airbnbs for wedding venues. And someone said they thought about doing this, but it was too much trouble because there were too many places that specifically didn't allow gatherings. And, you know, there's always the suggestion, that's okay, you just don't tell them it's for a wedding, but you've got to ask. And the majority of people who own and run Airbnbs and VRBO properties are not open to it. And in some areas, it's not allowed at all for insurance reasons. And then another person suggested that, you know, sure, use an Airbnb property, but have a plan B because hosts can cancel with very little notice, and that it happened to this person with their engagement party and they were left to scramble, you know, to work out another venue. And there are horses for courses as well. There's some times where all you want is a shed and you want to bring your drinks in and you want to bring your food in and you just want to celebrate there with some music. And I completely understand. But generally the expectations of most people for their wedding is that it is an elevated event. It's an event that doesn't happen every weekend. It's one where you want people to be safe, to have a great time, to be able to bring their cars in with lights, for example, to be able to park in a secure place with lights so when they leave at night, they don't run into a tree. And with these properties that aren't purpose-built for events, generally the room, the space, the maintenance, the insurance, the safety aspects that have to be in place for hotels and the like, they're just not prioritized for these venues because it's not their purpose. So we highly, highly recommend that you ask all the questions up front and that you get your permission. If it's not a traditional venue, get all your permission in writing. And hopefully that's in your terms and conditions, right? You'd hope that all these factors are covered. Ask the question. Question three is, do they do weddings on either side of a booking? So if you're having a Saturday wedding, do they allow weddings on the Friday and or the Sunday, because this will impact what time and space you've got to set up and potentially change the costs that you have. And this takes me back to my experience for our wedding. We had a Saturday night wedding celebration in the one space, in the one function space. We had the ceremony in there. They did a quick flip with some of the chairs. Then we had a cocktail event. We didn't have a whole heap of decor or furniture or much to set up, but there were a few key pieces that I had in my mind that my now husband and I had worked out. I'd created some things and I didn't have, as I said before, I didn't have a planner. I didn't have a coordinator who was going to run around and do it. It was just us. And we were lucky enough that we were staying in a hotel as well that had accommodation for my family. So we had a few hands on deck and we all met in the function room. And the idea was that we all met there on the Friday. We got everything together, set everything up, turned off the lights on Friday and walked in on Saturday ready to go. Unfortunately, there was a last minute event on the Friday in that same room that booked in, I think, about a month before our wedding. So that meant we couldn't have access. We couldn't have access on, you know, the Friday morning to set up and stuff, or even on the Friday night because this event went right up to midnight. And that left us on Saturday, waking up as early as possible on your own wedding day, going into the function space, trying to set up some lighting that was on a backdrop, trying to set up little centerpieces for the cocktail tables, trying to make sure that our signage was all up and all ready to go, and that our little chocolate spoons that we had for hot chocolate for the end, that was all set up, ready to go and hidden behind the bar, making sure that our wedding cakes, because we had tiny individual cakes that were all square and covered in fondant, long story, but that they were all set up with the signage. What else? Oh, we had a few little things like a little roasted marshmallow stand that we had outside on the deck for people to be able to have that, you know, because we had a winter wedding. We thought it'd be really nice to toast some marshmallows, like, and eat them by the heaters out on the deck during the cocktail party. So there was setting up of that as well. And I just remember it being about midday. I thought we had heaps of time. And it's embarrassing. It's embarrassing to say this, because I was already, you know, 5 years into being a celebrant. I had already been a wedding events manager. I had already done extensive hospitality work, worked in functions, worked in banquets, worked in, you know, five-star restaurant service. And there I was, 12 o'clock on the day of my wedding, completely unshowered, racing around this function room doing stuff. And I think that's the thing, you know, your logical brain, it switches off. It really does. And it's your emotional self that is there on the day, I found anyway. And someone came into the function room and went, "Camille, your hair and makeup artist is waiting for you." I'm like, "Oh, yeah, I got to go be a bride." And that stress, that pressure on the day, even though we didn't really have much to do, it was still too much. And if I could go back and if I could do it again, I would just try and work out some way to write a plan, to hand things over, to delegate, or better still, to pick a venue that gave me access when I needed access, not when they needed to give me access. And it doesn't always work out. There's always things, you know, there can be things that get booked in at the last minute and you just have to wear it. But ask up front so you know what the potential is and you can work out your get out of jail free card early. You still haven't written your vows yet, have you? Let me help. In around 20 minutes or so, you can easily write personalized wedding vows unlike anything you've heard before that will make your fiancé feel like the most loved, understood, and appreciated person on the planet. The How to Write Wedding Vows That Don't Suck instant download 17-page PDF ebook walks you through a step-by-step format for your vows, how to find the right words and phrases to describe your feelings and your fiancé, how to write that crucial first draft, and create your final wedding vows masterpiece. So if you don't know how or even where to start, if you've been Googling your little heart out, or if you've been calling them wedding vows, A-E-I-O-U, this ebook is for you. Included in there are also some bonus secrets for getting the most out of your wedding ceremony. So make sure you download your copy right now and get Write Your Wedding Vows crossed off your to-do list today. The link is in the show notes. So then once you leave your venue tour and you've already gotten all your questions on your checklist covered, you know, either through the package that they send out to you that you've crossed off, you know, those questions, you know the answers, you've also asked them about the sound restrictions, you've made sure they've got the correct permissions and insurance and everything to be a wedding venue, and you know what your access is like. Then once you leave the venue tour, you guys get in the car and then you go, "Oh my God, did you think this? I thought that. Did you think this? I thought that too." And you get all excited thinking that this place might be the one. Make sure, question four, you read the terms and conditions. Now, that's not really a question, I understand, but it's going to sober you up real quick. And there are going to be parts of the terms and conditions that you don't understand. And they're the questions you're asking. Ask the question/questions about the terms and conditions so you completely understand what happens if, because they lay it out for you. A professional place will lay out, this is what happens if this, this is what happens if that. Make sure that when payments are due, how they're due, when you could get a refund. Maybe you'll never get a refund, no matter what. It will say it in the terms and conditions, and you need to know this stuff because not everything always goes completely to plan. And you want to know what your risk factor is because this is what a wedding planner would be doing for you. They'd be sussing out how much risk you're taking on for the amount of money that you're paying and the type of celebration you're wanting. Read them, understand them. And then number five is to stalk their socials. So you're not verbally asking a question, but having a look through what, not just what they show, but the posts that they're tagged on. So other vendors who go to this venue, other couples who have chosen this venue and they've had their wedding there, have a look at this venue's tagged photos, as it's going to give you a better idea of the different photo locations you've got there and the potential look of your photos through how the venue presents in real weddings rather than just in promotional photos or styled shoots. Because as much as we love them, and God, they're pretty, sometimes the promotional photos, so in a glossy brochure or the ones that they have on their website or social media accounts, or a styled shoot, which is when a bunch of vendors get together and go, we'd like to create something to share with couples what is in style, what could look cool, how their wedding could go, what's trending, an option maybe they haven't thought about, something fresh, something new. A styled shoot is sometimes not a great comparison with what you want to do. They frequently have an unrealistic budget in place to make those photos pretty. And by budget, I mean that the venue has probably given up their place for free for this photo shoot, that a photographer frequently would give up their time for free to make this photo possible in lieu of getting promotions at that venue. The florist might ask for everyone to chip in with the cost of the actual wholesale flowers, but then put it all together for free, thousands of dollars of work. In addition to these costs that are absorbed by the vendors joining into this styled shoot, there is none of the realities of weddings. So, of course, weddings have people in them. They have a couple getting married. Generally, they have a wedding party. Generally, they have family members. And then there are friends as well. There are people who get in the way, people who stop things from happening. There are time pressures in a real wedding that don't happen on a styled shoot. And so real weddings are the photos you really want to have a look at to get a practical sense of how your venue is going to look. And so just to recap, the five important and perhaps little known things you need to ask your wedding venue before you pay anything or sign anything are, number one, about the noise restrictions. Number two, about the correct permits, licensing, council approval, registration, classification for the venue to operate as a wedding venue and get it in writing. Number three, find out what your access is like before and after your wedding day or days. This is called the bump in and bump out. Is that a bit sexual or is it just me? Find out how much time your team, so stylists, florists, hire people, etc., will have to make the dream come to life, and then when they will need to break it all down again and make it vanish from the space, because of course that bump out has to happen after your wedding takes place. So do they need it to happen that night at 12:30 a.m. and have everything out by 1 a.m., in which case you've got to get all your vendors in to that space to get it all out, or will they accept the next morning to bump out everything? You need to know this up front. Number four is read the T's and C's and then read them again. Ask about anything you don't understand And number five, stalk them in the nicest way to see how flexible they are and how realistic their promo photos are. Is that what it will look like in real life? Big thanks again to Tita from Pour Vita Ceremonies and Emily from The Modern Approach. I'll put their links in the show notes as well because they are both exceptional vendors too. And I'd love to hear from you. DM me on Instagram at @umbridely and let me know. What are the questions you wish you had asked your wedding venue? Or are you going wedding venue hunting this week, this month? What is it that you're most excited about? What are you most anxious about? I'd love to hear. And I'll chat with you next week. That about wraps it up for this episode of the Umbridely podcast. For the links and resources we mentioned, please head to the show notes. And if you love the show, please review and subscribe on the podcast platform you're on now so you don't miss out on a single episode. Thanks so much for listening. And remember, weddings are a team sport. Catch you soon.